You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Jamie Carragher, and you are listening to the Cop Eye Podcast.
What is happening, everyone? Welcome back to the Cop Eye Podcast. It is the 4 day late League Cup final reaction show, but we've been celebrating too hard ever since then. That's why we haven't managed to get around to doing it. And of course, there's been another game since then. The kids went to Anfield and beat Southampton 3-0, so we'll get to that as well towards the end of the show. But as always, I am Mick Moran. I'm joined by Christian Anderson. How are you doing? How are you doing, lad, on the bevvies? How's it going?
Oh yeah, I'm having a bevy. I'm still celebrating, even though I'm taking a little bit easy now because I'm going to have bevies during the weekend too when we play against Nottingham. So, but yeah, I'm really good. You know, pleased obviously for the 10th League Cup that we were talking about in the previous show about the possibility to grab that one for Klopp and for the fans and all, for the players obviously, but also very pleased about, you know, the performance from the kids and in the FA Cup as well, which we will talk about a little bit later. So I'm very happy, you know, I'm always happy as a Liverpool supporter nowadays. There's nothing to complain about really. Nope. You can have your little ups and downs and we had the really bad years, but at the time and this, you know, moment, it's absolutely just fucking enjoyable. So, yeah, cheers and up the Reds and, you know, happy League Cup trophy.
Yeah, it's boss. I think I saw something interesting. I can't remember who it was, so I can't reference them, but someone said on Twitter, and it was quite interesting, like, the feeling around, like, this team and this squad feels stronger than even when we were, like, winning, like, Champions Leagues and Premier League titles. And I was like, sat down and thought about it. I was like, I think it's because we're very good. We've got loads of injuries. We're still winning stuff. We're still winning games. Klopp's decided he's going to fuck off, unfortunately, which is, I'm still praying he's going to change his mind about, but he won't, unfortunately. I think all that mixed in together where it's, I think the worry was, I think we referenced it on the Klopp like leaving reaction show, that we were worried that it might have a bit of an adverse effect on what we're trying to achieve this season. Of course, we were doing well at that point. We didn't want it to affect us in a negative way where, I think you mentioned, like, if we're trying a little bit too hard, we're trying to, like, you because it's in the back of your mind that this is like the last era of a Klopp team, that we need to, the pressure's a little bit on, a little bit more in terms of that final pass, or if you're through on goal late and you overthink things and you fuck it up and you go out of a, you lose a final or you go out of a competition or whatever. But I think it's galvanized us. I really do. I think it's focused us a little bit, especially like amount of injuries we've had. I mean, we'll we talk about it, and because it's hard not to, because we've been missing that many players, and we're missing even more after the Chelsea game. But I think it's definitely helped us in a good way to, I don't know, just give us a little bit more, if possible, more focus on the goals and how historic this final season can be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I read something about what Alexis McAllister said about they getting the information that Klopp is leaving, and he was sitting next to Salah, and Salah said the coach is leaving, and how he then referred to how the players felt and got together to obviously give it all for Klopp, to give him a send-off that he deserves. And obviously, we can talk about the chances to get, you know, four titles in total and all that kind of stuff. But to even, you know, go on and do it the way that we did in the League Cup final, which we talk about obviously in summarize, but it's just a step on the way, and it shows the morality and the group, the feeling in the group and everything. So I think not only the kids that are taking part now, and we obviously refer them to the kids, you know, they are young, but they look like they've been playing for us for a season or two, some of them, you know, they already like to know the place. But at the same time, this group of players, since we got rid of the old midfield, if you like, and got the new players in, they you know, adapted so quick into what we're doing, how we're playing, and the feeling and the culture of Liverpool Football Club. Like McAllister, for example, it seems like he got it from day one, what it means to play for his club, and the way that he represents the club and play and behave himself in interviews and on the pitch, and, you know, by the sideline when you see him as well. It kind of fits perfectly in the way that I look at a Liverpool player. So I think that's the thing. It's a group dynamic. Klopp, obviously, the responsible man for getting that to happen. But it goes down all the way to the youth system and the kids that actually playing kids football for Liverpool. You know, the really youth ones. It's coming from there, and it goes all the way through until you hopefully one day represent the first team, and you know exactly what it means and what to do. So, you know, he's going to leave, and it's going to be a blow for us. But at the same time, you know, he leaves the clubs in great hands, if you like, you know, in terms of who's going to make a decision on the next manager and stuff. But where that manager is going to come in and what he's going to have to take on is something that it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be a tough task, but it's still a club that is in great position, and it's going forward still. So
massively, I think that, of course, all the news about like Michael Edwards might be coming back to oversee stuff and all that, I think that's, I mean, yes, please, if that can happen and he can come back and oversee like what's going to be a very tricky period. But like you said, in terms of like players, we've got senior players, youth players, every type of player, we've got it. I think the youth players coming to the forefront more recently as well is even more incredible. I think the stuff that they've been doing, like you mentioned, has been it's amazing to see. But let's get stuck into the game a little bit. It was 1-0 to the Reds, of course. A late, lovely, like 2 minutes to go in extra time. One of them goals where you know it's game over now because it's too late in the day. Like when you get a 90th minute, it's basically the extra time equivalent of a stoppage time winner in 90 minutes. But that's basically what it was. But the game as a whole, I thought, in terms of, I think we basically, on the preview show, we pretty much called the lineup because we were toying with the idea whether Nunes and Salah would be available. Of course, they weren't. And then we saw the whole Nunes celebration at the end of the game. In itself, we could do 20 minutes on because that was just fucking hilarious. But I think the players that we put out, of course, Kelleher, Bradley, Konate, Van Dijk, Robbo, McAllister, who you mentioned before, Endo, Gravenberch, Diaz, Gakpo, Elliot. I think that was the strongest side we could put out, to be honest. I think me and you were talking about like whether he'll go with Gomez, and just because Gomez is in form, and keep Robbo on the bench for a bit of energy maybe towards the end of the game, knowing that these games always go to extra time. I wish it hadn't, to save a bit of the energy and the legs for the lads, but it always seems to go that way when we play Chelsea in a cup final. But I think in terms of what we had on the pitch, and I think availability and players being in form, I was very happy with the lineup for that.
Yeah, you know, we talked about that we didn't know what was going to be said on the press conference because we did that show before that. And obviously it was confirmed that, or more likely that, you know, Nunez, Salah and the others were not available, like Szoboszlai and stuff. So obviously that's a little bit of a negativity at that moment and thinking like it would be nice to have them, you know, available on the bench and having an impact maybe if it's needed for at least, you know, 10 minutes or whatever. But when we talked about the lineup in the show and then saw it ahead of the game, I agree with you. It's probably the strongest lineup that we could put on the pitch. And, you know, with Andrew Robertson coming in, obviously with his experience and keeping Conor Bradley because he's just been that good. You know, it's a little bit of a blow for Gomez, who's been good as well, you know, not starting. But at the same time, I think you have to think about where, you know, we were talking about the FA Cup game where you played in a, you know, in a different position as well as a number six. So I think I think Klopp have said it. I've read things on Twitter as well. Klopp have said, you know, he can play in so many positions. So I think it's more of a question of he's good from the bench, because if you need a change because of an injury, if you need a, you know, a change because of a system change, or you need to do something because of the tactics not working, he can play in so many positions defensively, that it's better to have him as an option and then play your, what do you call it, like the players that plays in a normal position or the usual position is to start. So, you know, but I was pleased when I saw it. I thought, you know, this is the best that we have. So let's go and give them a game. There's nothing we can do about the injuries. We just have to go with what we have.
Yeah, I think it unfortunately played out the way you've just said there, because we had to make that change on the 28th minute when Gravenberch went down, and I had to go for a quick piss, so I didn't see that. I just saw him getting stretched off, and I was like, "This has got to be a joke." Like how many fucking injuries? And then I was like, "Gomez coming on, like that's like in terms of like we've mentioned, like a player in form who can come in and isn't going to be rusty because he's had that consistency and the rhythm in his game recently where he's been so fucking good. They can come on and you're like, right, well, Gomez is on the field now, so if anyone would more defensively stronger as a result of that. You just have to look at the positives, even though it is annoying when you get another injury.
Yeah, and especially when it's a tackle where he gets injured, obviously, because of the tackle, but the tackle itself is not penalised. You know, it's not even a yellow card or anything like it. Because I know that you think about, you know, what was going on and people say it could be a straight red. Even some people argued, you know, I've heard pods, so I've seen on Twitter and stuff. And I don't disagree with it, but it's a tough one because of the red cards that we saw in the start of the season on Jones, for example. You know, that has been the, you know, what we look at, like what is a red card nowadays in terms of those tackles. But it's more like if he got a yellow there, if it wasn't a straight red card, we say, for example, and he got a yellow card, he has that yellow card from an early stage in the game. So that will affect how we play and how he will play. So the referees needs to, you know, fucking step up their levels a bit and actually, you know, give a yellow card for those tackles. And if you got VAR, because I thought, well, it's no VAR in this game. Obviously, we will see that after when they, you know, got when they called off the Sterling goal. So I was like, how come they didn't check, you know, that tackle? Because it's a dangerous foul. I thought, you know, they will look at it for but you didn't see any replay. So, you know, it's an injury, and we will see how long he will be out for. Hopefully not too long. But, you know, at the same time, that needs to be a yellow card at least, because that affects maybe the game in the long term and stuff like that. So, yeah, horrible. But, yeah, it's Casey Adoye, obviously. You know, it's shite.
Yeah, 16 mil Endo is just absolutely fucking bossing them everywhere. Just absolute, what a guy. I mean, we can talk about McAllister, we can talk about Endo, we can talk about most of the lads, but them two in there, they seem to be a common theme that we're going through every game where you're like, them two lads are maybe small in stature, but in terms of heart and fight, fuck me, they are just so good. And in terms of the first half, like, I think it kind of played out a little bit as I expected. I thought, like, just in terms of the stats, the first half, they had two shots on target. We had three on target and one off target. So we had four shots, they had two. And it kind of exploded a little bit, I guess, second half, where we had seven shots and they had 10. We had three on target, four off. They had four on and six off. But the bit I want to get to is the Van Dijk offside, because I think it's one of them. I think it is like VAR, when it goes to VAR and stuff, they're always going to be like, it's all this like, if the ball's going into an area, will that player who's been blocked off be in the zone or that whatever shit they say? where the ball's going to land. And I get it in like 30, but like, it's hilarious that last night a quite similar thing happened in the United game, and they scored a last minute winner over Forest, knocked Forest out of the FA Cup, and we'll be playing them next, United away. But it's like, there's just no consistency. It's like, it's so subjective. It's unbelievable. Like, back before VAR, if you got a decision wrong, you'd be so pissed off. But at least it's like, well, decision's the decision. It's happened, split second decision. It's done. Get over it. Carry on with the game. But now it's like, they're taking ages to look at it, and they're overanalyzing it. They're taking too long. They've fucked us up enough times this season with Diaz and red cards and God knows what else. I don't even want to get into it. But I just feel like there's... I don't want to moan about VAR because I'm bored of talking about it, but it just keeps happening every game. It's like, that happened on the 60th minute. We could have saved us. I mean, luckily we still won the game, but it's like they're trying to do everything they can to stop us from scoring a goal. And they could have easily scored. And imagine they would have went on to win the cup there. And we're like, well, that goal should have stood. It's lucky that we did go on and win it. But I just think it's, again, it's just another one of those massive grey areas, completely subjective, where the when you see like the refs on like ref watch and all that, it's always like, oh, if they get put into a corner by a good argument, all they ever say is the ref's bound by the laws. They always say that term, and it's like, well, change the fucking laws then. I understand you can't do it mid-season, but it seems like they are doing it incrementally, like, because it's like the decisions that we've had, like the Jones one, the red card. You've seen loads of them since then, and it hasn't been a red card. Even with VAR, they're still not giving the red card to them. So it's like they're still changing them slightly through the season to try and make even it out, or to make it not as like black and white. Then in a way, they're making it even more grey. And I'm sick of talking about it, but we have to talk about it because it's so infuriating.
Yeah, because I saw the replays obviously on TV, and you know they were discussing it in the Swedish studio that they had for the game as well. And you know, there was one saying, you know, he could see why, and the other expert said, "Nah, for me, it's nothing really." And I could see, you know, that, you know, Endo is first and foremost maybe obviously standing in an offside position and then screening off. You know, who was it? Chilwell? I can't remember.
I think it was Colwell, was it?
Colwell, sure. Maybe, yeah. But it's, the thing is, though, like, he just stands. He doesn't really, even though he doesn't look at the ball or go into the offensive zone, try to get the ball, he just stands. It's a bit of a tactic, obviously, to screen someone off, but it's not like he's, you know, pushing and fighting for it. He just stands his ground. You need to be able to just stand in the way. If you're using your arms and you're, properly wrestling him away, yeah, I can see why that could be a free kick. But if you're standing there using your body, yes, it's screening someone, but it must be taken in consideration when it comes to tactical play in a game. Like, I'm just going to stand there. If someone's trying to get, you know, around me, I'm just going to stand my ground and he has to take me down. If he uses his hands, like I said, yeah, I understand the referee blows his whistle and it's a free kick. But at this point, I don't see that there's any foul. So I think, you know, they taking consideration their potential offside position and that is screening, and they put that them two together and just, you know, doesn't give the goal, which is shit. And then obviously we saw Man United scoring the same kind of goal with the same kind of situation. So that, I don't really care. It's Man United. That's shit, obviously, but I don't really care in the long term. I do care that the referees get the things right in games, because we've seen so many fucks up so many times. So that, you know, that's more important than obviously Man United going through or not, in my opinion, because in the long term we don't want to have to see this all the time and actually debate it like this every time.
Yeah, I saw a funny comment today. It was like, if there's going to be fouls for people screening people, Arsenal will never score another set piece. It's like, it happens all when you watch, like, not even just Arsenal, but like players just standing the ground, not doing anything wrong particularly, just standing in the way. But
it's a body, like they use the body.
They've done that to goalies for years. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, let's not even go down that road. Like, we'll go down a VAR wormhole. I can't be asked. It's fucking does me head in. But yeah, we could have been 1-0 up. But then we're getting later into the game, and of course, we haven't got the Salahs and Nunezes on the bench. I remember looking to Bradley comes off, Bobby Clark comes on, who we'll get onto in a bit because I thought he was fucking very good against Southampton. Bobby Clark comes on for Bradley. Robbo comes on towards the end. McConnell comes on as well for McAllister, and Danz comes on for Cody Gakpo. So 87th minute, we lose, Robertson comes off, McAllister comes off, Gakpo comes off, and we bring on Tsimikas, McConnell and Danz. So we're bringing on basically two youngsters and Tsimikas, who's the backup left back, going into staring down the battle of extra time, which of course it makes sense because we need fresh players. We can't expect McAllister and Gakpo, who've been playing loads recently, to just crack on and do another half an hour and whatever. But it's just at that point I was like, I didn't think they were going to go on to win it, but I thought it severely weakens our chances now because we can't expect those players to carry on, and because they're going to get injured, and we're fucked even more. Yeah. We've got to replace them. But then it's like, I'm just going to be proud of what happens now because we're bringing on these players. We've got no alternative. We just need to see what happens. But to see that the likes of them players coming on, it's massive for them. It's like you said, like there's, it's structured from the top to the bottom. And these lads are coming here because they want to get a chance, and they're getting the chances because we've got no players at the minute. But I think I've said it on that, I think it was the last show, they're not just getting thrown in. They are getting thrown in because we haven't got as many options, but I still think in terms of quality and what they can provide on the ball, and trying to be as close as the real thing as the first 11 as they can be, I thought they all done amazingly well when they came on.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in the situation where we are and we look at the end of the game, which has been quite intense, obviously, with chances both ways. You know, Chelsea could have scored a few. You know, they hit the post and, you know, Callum saved us and we had a few chances. And it was like the game was going in different directions. You know, we got more intensity and energy and then they got more. So I guess in the end of the day, when we took the more experienced players off, we lost a bit of experience, but we brought on energy. And that is actually what killed off Chelsea for a bit, you know, obviously in extra time, because yes, we might be more inexperienced with the kids, but at the same time they were running, fighting, because obviously, like you said, they're coming on in a game which is this big, in a final, and they have nothing to lose, really. They don't have anything to prove at this point, because, you know, we've been playing the whole game almost and we're going into extra time soon, and they just know that just go in, do the job and run your socks off, really, and which they did. And I think that took Chelsea by surprise a bit, because Chelsea had their moments in the game, but I think they were getting tired as well. And, you know, they didn't do the same kind of substitution. So when the kids were coming on and the players we referred to, you know, it seems, and you understand that they've been playing this kind of, you know, system and tactics since they were younger, because they kind of know exactly what they're going to do. I've said it before, you can tell they are not as strong maybe in positions and body and stuff because they're still young, but on the ball and tactically they are very, very clever. So, you know, all credit to them. And I think, you know, when they came on, you felt like this can go either way now. It yeah. could be that Chelsea goes on and score one and two because they play through inexperienced players. Like they find a way because we are not quick enough, we are not experienced enough with these players, or we can actually manage to go through the game, even go and win it because of the energy, or we at least make it to penalties, where it will be another question about who's going to win, because it's more of a lottery and a little bit of luck as well. So I thought, you know, I think Jürgen did well and made the right decisions there and then, because how we look, because I saw that McAllister was really tired. You can tell that, you know, that and Robertson needed to come off, and Gakpo was tired. So it was more like, if we don't take them off, we're going to be fucked anyway, I felt. Yeah. So we need to do something. And yeah, I think he called it right in the end. Not saying that because we won, I think that changed the rhythm of the game going into extra time. And we actually were the better team during that time, obviously.
Yeah, I think the McConnell little cameo, I thought he was just like getting on the ball. Them little little short 5-6-7 yard passes, whatever, just ticking us over was lovely. Dan's could have scored. He had a great chance where Van Dijk heads it back over to him and he has an opportunity to get his first goal there. Of course, he got his first two goals in Southampton, but he could have scored there.
Yeah,
Kwanzaa comes on, and I think like you said, there was chances. We're not going to get round to talking about every chance because there was so many. It was a bit of a mad second half. But we need to talk about Keller because I think we've mentioned in the past, like, where if he's coming up into a game where Alisson's still fit, he's a little bit rusty and maybe shots are going in that you should be saving. And I think since the last couple of weeks where he's been, of course, because Alisson's injured, he's stepped up massively. Like, he's you talk about, like, someone grabbing the opportunity. Like, he's just grabbed it with both hands and was like, this is, like, my chance to shine. Like, whether it's, like, winning some trophies with us and then he leaves maybe next year. I hope he doesn't, because he's so valuable to have if Ali gets in you, because Ali does unfortunately pick up these injuries. But there's just a few times where I've watched back the highlights and it's like pinball in our box and I'm like, I'm just so glad Keller was in goal, because I can only put it down to the luck of the Irish, honestly. Like, the way that was bouncing around that pen box and then it just nicely like float up into his arms, and I was like, how has that not gone in? Like, we got away with quite a few of them. And I was, but in terms of like his presence being Alisson like, I think the one that stood out to me was the one where Gallagher's basically threw on goal. Maybe Keller 2 months ago, that slides under his foot, or he gets a glove on it, but it still goes in. But he puts his arms up and he makes himself wide, like spreads himself. And that was just like along with the other saves that he made, I just thought it was I was like, that the name, our name's on the trophy here, because it keeps going our way, the little bits of luck that we need, which we're not you. I don't find that we're usually that fortunate with, like, when it goes in the box and it's pinball and round, it always ends up going in off the post or whatever. But I just thought Keller was class, to be honest. I absolutely loved his performance.
Yeah, and he's 25 now, and he's been there for, you know, a few years, and we know him, we know what he can do. But I think sometimes he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. You know, some people actually talk him down, thinking, you know, he's not as good as we want to. But at the same time, you can't compare anyone with the best in the world. Like, you can't have Alisson and Alisson again. You can't clone him yet. So, you know, we're not there yet. But at the same time, we've got like a second goalie that is that good and have that levels in him that he can actually perform like in the final, and even against Southampton, which we talk about, you know, he was good there as well with saves and, you know, having his presence in the box and doing great things, good with his feet. So you can't question the fact that we got our second goalkeeper that is obviously not as good as Alisson, but, you know, good enough to play for us in these kind of games and perform on a high, high level. And, you know, we should just enjoy and be happy, because, like you said, it might be that he's going in the summer, because he's that good that he could play in so many good teams and actually, you know, play every week and win things as well, depending on where he goes. You know, to be honest, like, he got the chance to, you know, maybe playing for Liverpool will be his best option for silverware. But at the same time, he's a footballer. This is his job. He want to play regular football because, you know, in the end of the day, when you get older and you finish your career, you will look back and be like, yeah, I played so and so many hundred games for a certain team. But in Liverpool at the time now, he won't do that because Alisson is, you know, that good. So, but, you know, yeah, I think, you know, he was brilliant. And I think, you know, sometimes you just have to, you know, take a moment and just realize how lucky we are to have those kind of backup players, if you like, in terms of being a second goalkeeper. But because if you're in that position, you don't really play much, because a goalkeeper is always a goalkeeper playing. You know, if you've got the first one that is that good, you don't really move him that often, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the question mark's always been for me, like, because like we've said, like, he only comes in for one game, or he's out for 10 and he might play another one. It's that, has he got the rhythm to come in? And I think he's proved over the last couple of games that if he can perform at them levels for Liverpool in cup finals, in massive games, you can do it for anyone. You really can. I mean, I think it's different at Liverpool because the vibe that we've got going on, Klopp still here and that, I think it must be quite like, I think I mentioned on the last show, like, it's a perfect environment and atmosphere to come in and feel like, don't feel nervous or whatever. Like, I think nerves can wreck a goalie. I think we've had plenty of them in the past who are just like shocking, to be honest. But Keller is one that has always been promising. Like you said, he's 25 now. I think he's 26 this year. So I guess in terms of goalie, he's still young. He's got another 10 years or more, whatever he wants, because how good he is. But yeah, I'm just made up for him. We needed to have a little chat about it because I think he deserves his plaudits for how good he's been. To be honest, he's been amazing. But yeah, let's jump straight to the goal because that's what we want to talk about. Virgil van Dijk, 118th minute. Kostas Tsimikas. I actually put a bet on. I didn't win because I'd done a few other little bets within the bet. I'm not a better really, but I did like Van Dijk goal and a couple of yellow cards, but it was within 90 minutes. But I just fancied, I just got a feeling before the game. I was like, I feel like set pieces are going to be massive for us. I think when you've got Van Dijk, who's scored quite a few recently, I think Tsimikas being back, I just felt like it was a nice little recipe for a goal there. And that's where it came from. Lovely delivery. And especially after the other goal being disallowed and Van Dijk just being like, nah, I'm not going to be, no one's going to stop me here. I'm going to get on my head on the end of this. And when that just, yeah, the scenes when that goes in the back of the net, yeah, it was just crazy. Because like I said, it's that late in the day where it's like, we've basically won the cup here. So you can celebrate the goal and you can also kind of celebrate the 10th League Cup as well at the same time. But it was just an incredible moment. And I think it was encapsulated in his, because I think his celebrations are usually quite like sleek and like, yeah, he's maybe thought about a little bit of his slides on his knees or like a proper nice little swift jump in the air and like pumping his fist. This one, he just kind of ran for a bit and then fell over and everyone jumped on him. Because he was like, yeah, I'm fucked and thank fuck that went in. I think that was kind of his feeling at the time, wasn't it? But yeah, a boss moment.
Yeah, and you know, the goal is brilliant, the delivery is brilliant, like you said, from Tsimikas, and the way that he just, you know, runs into the area and gets his head on the ball and, you know, directed in that perfect away from the goalkeeper in that corner. It's a brilliant goal. It's a Virgil van Dijk goal. It's a captain's goal. And at that moment as well, like you said, you can, you know, by the way, you know, you look it through the TV with the sound on and how, you know, that everyone's like nervousness and the emotions just drop, so everyone just, you know, fucking blow their minds out because, you know, they know that obviously Virgil scored his second and that was good because it's him, it's the captain, and the first one was disallowed and he got the second one to kind of win it for us, like you said, because it was that late, so we knew that if we can just hold on for like a couple of minutes, that's, you know, that's the League Cup one. And, you know, we can talk about the atmosphere before as well, you know, during extra time before we scored, when the LA was going and stuff. That, you know, it's incredible, the crazy clips that you've seen on Twitter when you listen and you got the sound up high on, yeah, your mobile or laptop, wherever you're watching it. It's actually, you know, something that would be like, that is actually lifting the roof there. Like, you don't, yeah, really hear that often. But when the fans... You can talk about atmosphere at Anfield, you know, going up and down, and some people can say, you know, the famous atmosphere and we're not that good. But when it actually matters and when it's needed, we're one of the best in the world, you know, without a doubt. And we help the players to come over that line when it's needed as well. And everyone is saying it. And I really like that we got like this very respected and great sports journalist in Sweden who I interviewed in my podcast, and he's doing his own podcast and everyone listened to it. He's a great guy, very clever, good storyteller, you know, and stuff like that. And he was in that studio, the Swedish television studio, and he said, you know, other fans to other teams, because he supports Tottenham himself, you know, can many times say, you know, that, you know, Liverpool fans and, you know, talk about, you know, walk alone, the atmosphere and, you know, this means more, kind of, you know, that kind of way. That could be something, you know, that triggers, you know, supporters to other teams because we think we are a little bit better and we are more, yeah, special and all that. But he said these moments, they're doing it them over and over and over again. And we see them in the past, yeah, in the history, and we've seen them now and they're still creating them. You know, we've seen the finals, so we've seen the moments of, you know, so he said, whatever we think, they are entitled to say it because they do it. So he didn't say it with a joke away. He said it very serious, like, yeah, it's just the way it is. So whatever other people said and supporters of the team says, it's just the way it is. Sorry. And I love that because that goes out to all the Swedish supporters, to, you know, Man United supporters or whatever. And I was like, yeah, you got it right here, mate. You know, so, but, you know, to go back to that, you know, when he scored and the atmosphere and the feelings, I was screaming myself, even if, you know, it's a little bit later, even if it's not late, it's still like I was screaming. I probably, if there was anyone sleeping around in the apartment, you know, next to us, they probably woke up, because it is, you build up the emotions and the feelings inside. You're getting more and more nervous because you think, yeah, we're bringing the kids on. It's probably, you know, this could be the way that Chelsea goes and win it. And the longer the game goes on, they probably have the more experienced and, you know, players that have played in big tournaments and big, games before. So you felt like the longer it goes on, and if it goes to penalties, then it's a lottery and stuff. So when that goal went in, everything just, you just dropped all the emotions out, and that's a great feeling. It's one of the best feelings that you can have ever in the world, I would say, when that happens.
Yeah, it is. I think, like I said, Van Dijk's celebration kind of said that to me. He was like, ah, thank God we scored. Like, two minutes away from taking pens, and of course, he probably would have had to take one, and it's like a lottery, and it's just a fucking nightmare. So, yeah. And I think that's, I haven't read that thing that you've mentioned, like, of course, because I imagine it's in Swedish and I only know three words or four words. So, but yeah, I think we've said it before again, like, it's not, maybe we think that we are like better in terms of atmosphere, but it's like, again, it's no fluke that we see these things happen against the odds, and then we go on and win. And then it's because of the atmosphere and the players plug into each other completely, and when we go on and do it, and we see it all the time. Like, there's a amount of times in my lifetime that I've saw a game and been like, right, that one can't be topped. It goes and gets topped. Yeah, then it's like, exactly. That one's definitely the top one. And then it goes and gets topped again. It's like,
I know it's not the show for it, but like you said, in your lifetime and what you remember, you can go back to the treble in 2001, the FA Cup, how Michael Owen, turns that game around with his goals. You go to the final against Alaves and we play it that, in that way. And we score many goals, they score goals, and we win it on the golden goal, which is, an own goal. It's different ways of winning things. And then you come up to the Champions League final 2005, the way we go, obviously, and win that. And you look at Gerrard final 2000. It's not, obviously, there's time in between those finals and moments, but it could be years and years sometimes. But when we do it, it's not like, yeah, we went to win it 2-0. And sometimes I fucking wish we did, for my heart, for my blood pressure. But at the same time, that's not the moments you remember. You remember when we won it with the kids in extra time and Virgil van Dijk scored his second header in the League Cup, and everyone can talk down the League Cup, especially Pep, the little cunt. Sorry. But, but the way, it's not about the cup, mate. I want to tell him, it's not about the cup. It's about the way we win it. That's the thing. And you will never understand it, being a manager for a cheating club and being a checkbook manager. You can never understand the emotions, because you don't have the bond with your supporters and the culture in your club that is founded years and years and years and years ago back in history, and the way that the club behaves, and the way the people in Liverpool, you never understand it because you've chosen the clubs that just like money. And I don't say that to be sarcastic or anything. That's actually how I feel as a supporter. It means more because you're doing it the right way. So I was ranting now about how we do it, obviously, but it's a proof again that we do it. Like, we might not do it the easy way, but when we do it the hard way, it means a lot more, because it turns out to be a moment in time in a game which we will remember in 10, 20, 30, 40 years time and tell our kids or whatever. It's not just like, oh yeah, we won 2-0 and no one cared. It's actually, we did this and that, and we brought the kids on, and there were 3, 4, 5 of them, and they did a great job. But then fucking Van Dijk, he was knackered, scored that goal, and everyone went ballistic, It's another way. It's another thing. And that's what I love with the club, because, all the memories they've given me and us through the years that I've been alive, and when I've seen them, I guess there's many people who wouldn't say it, but, admit it, but they probably envy us a lot, supporters out there who never see these things that we do.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that whole Pep thing was funny, like the way, he was trying to like, seemed like he was trying to downplay it, but it's like, well, when you did he win for like four in a row? It's like, well,
yeah,
you've got so much money, and it's so easy for you, because you've got, like you said, checkbooks and loads of money, and it's.
You can rotate and have your second team, it'd still be one of the best teams that is in that cup. Even though there's obviously Premier League teams, but if other Premier League teams rotate in that cup, like, I wouldn't say us or Arsenal, whatever, because we still got good teams. But, if there's any, you know, some teams probably don't rotate because it's their chance of winning a trophy. Say Fulham, for example, they probably go the best team because they think we're going to go as far as we can and actually go for this one. But if they do rotate, obviously they will be, you know, weakened quite a lot. If Man City do that, you know, it's the same kind of. So it's easy for him to sit there and say that. That's why I can't really respect, you know, the whole thing. So just leave it there. Leave them out. Bastards. Yeah.
It's. I was gonna say it's a good job we've got the explicit ticked on the Owl podcast because we've been throwing all kinds of C bombs and F bombs and all that over the gaff, but it's all good because we've warned the people the swear words are gonna happen. So there we are. but yeah, let's talk about Pep. We won our 10th League Cup. And yeah, like you said, in the way that we did it, the whole culture of the club and all that, it's absolutely spot on. And it's hard to explain to other fans, I find, like other rival fans and that. Like, I think I've said this before as well. I keep saying that, sorry, but I think maybe it comes across like a little bit cringy, like from their point of view, because it's like, oh, like you never walk alone. It's dead soppy and like blah, blah, blah. I sing it every game and it's like, we're against the rest of the world and all this shit and whatever, but it's like, but that's just the history of the club and the stuff that it's gone through, like good and bad, have shaped the
history of a city and people as well.
Exactly, it's so enriched in so many things. It's not just a football club, and I think it's hard to get that across to someone who hasn't lived it or doesn't support the club. I think that's something that. I would love to. If, I don't know if someone's maybe wrote a book about this where I can go, right, what is it to me? What does it mean to support Liverpool? If someone can just like go to writing, just write a nice little encyclopedia, 1,000 pages, and then just go read that and come back to me in
exactly. But that's what I refer to, that like Erik Niva, that sport journalist, the Swedish one. He's, like I said, he's got his own podcast in Swedish, obviously, but they do stories about all kind of eras and teams and personalities in football. And he, you know, his research and the way that he tells stories, it's, you know, it's brilliant. That's what I love to. And the episodes could be 2 hours long, and it could be three of them, like three episodes that is 2-3 hours long each. But you don't get tired of listening to it because the way that he tells stuff. And that's why I also respect the way he said it. Like the what you said just now about Liverpool, you know, walk around the fans and, you know, this means more, and how, that's why I respect what he said in the studio, like I said before. The way he actually explained, like, we can feel and think whatever we want, but it's actually the truth. Like, that's the thing. And like I said, he supports Tottenham, and he was just like, everyone can be annoyed, everyone can be jealous, everyone can hate the Liverpool supporters for how we make us special. But it's not just because we make us special, it's because they are. And that's what he said, and I love that, because obviously everyone that was viewing the studio heard that, and I guess it was more than just Liverpool and Chelsea sports at the time. Yeah, and that's what I love. Like, yeah, he's just being fucking truthful, and you're saying straight, and, you know, that's the thing. And I love that you said someone should write a book on it and go back, you know, history, why, you know, things that have happened through the years as well, and why that it feels like that, and why it's more than football, and it's actually society. The city, the people, and what they've been going through. And I'm saying that as someone from Sweden, but I know it because I love to read up on it. Like, exactly. I love to just dive into all these things and all the facts and well, read about it and learn about it. That comes with being a supporter of Liverpool Football Club, in my opinion.
Well, you said you wanted to start some writing, so there's your job, lad.
Get
your pad and pen out and start. Yes,
I'll come back to you in 10 years.
It'll be worth it. Right, let's move on, because we've digressed slightly there. Apologies, but yeah, it's the perks of having like a bullet point form, and you just like you just free flow and just go wherever the fuck you want. That's the joy of doing podcasts, I guess. But yeah, 10th League Cup, boss win, boss night, everything was just celebrations after.
Yeah, all the content that came out.
Everything was just like, I was just like, try not to be glued to my phone, because of course I was, unfortunately didn't get to go, but like I just wanted to like celebrate it with the people around me and just be like chat about the game and just like stuff like that, and then and the day afterward I was severely hungover, was like 4 hours on my phone, just like watching every clip, every angle of everything. Like, that's just, it's just so good. But let's talk about yesterday against Southampton. Lovely 3-0 win in the FA Cup fifth round. Of course, what we mentioned earlier, Man United jammed the way through Forest. It was the draw was before the game, which I think Carragher mentioned that they should do it after the game, really, because it's like,
I agree.
It should be like, you should know you're going to play because it's more exciting. But yeah, they beat Forest, so we're playing them next. But we mentioned the youth players, and Klopp was talking after the League Cup game, like, we've got a game in 3 days. I can't even think about it. I don't know who's going to play. I don't know who's fit. We knew Salah and Nunes probably weren't going to play. Endo picked up a little bit of a niggle, and there's players who played loads of minutes. So in terms of the lineup, Keller in goal, Bradley right back, Kwanzaa, Van Dijk, Tsimikas left back. Midfield three of McConnell, Joe Gomez and Bobby Clark. That was the one that threw me. Gomez is the six that absolutely blew my mind. And then front three of Elliot, Lewis Kumas and Cody Gakpo. So I thought it was, again, still a nice blend of course, Quant has played, still a youngster, but played loads of games now. So I expect a high level of him. Same with Bradley. Weirdly, like, I expect high level as these kids. They've only played a handful of games, but it's mad how much you trust them already. It's crazy. Of course, Van Dijk's in there, Tsimikas, McConnell and Clark surrounding Joe Gomez in a midfield three. It's just hilarious to say out loud again. I've got to say it again. And then Kumas having his debut. But it was like, we knew Southampton were a good football playing side. I don't think I've seen clips of them this season, and I've seen how good they are, but I didn't really appreciate how decent they were properly until they're up against the Liverpool side. They were very, very good, to be fair to them. But again, Keller in goal was just, he kept us in the game that first half. Of course, Kumas goes on to score on the 44th minute and get his debut goal. But before that, we were living a bit of a charmed life again, where the ball was getting in the box, there was balls in behind. Of course, when you're playing Gomez and as a six for the first time ever, and you've got loads of youth in there, it's going to happen in terms of transition against the decent side. But Keller again was just fucking incredible, weren't he?
Yeah, and I think when you looked at the starting lineup, I actually saw it as, I thought Joe Gomez was going to play to the right as a right back, and then Harvey Elliott going down central with Conor Bradley actually playing, you know,
on the wing.
On the wing, because that's when you play. So I thought, you know, they mixed up the positions here when they showed the graphics on TV. I was like, nah, it's not right and stuff. But when you saw the game, it'd be like, all right, he's actually playing there and Elliott's playing up front. So, okay, let's go. And you can, like you said, you know, all credit to Southampton. Obviously, they know that we are weakened. So obviously, their manager have said, let's go for it. Put pressure on them high up, because they got so many youngsters around in midfield and stuff. So make sure that you cover those spaces and don't let them have time, because they might be a little bit, you know, struck by the moment and also not having experience. And you can tell the first 20 minutes, even 30 minutes, I thought, you know, like you said, Kelleher saved us many times, and they had a few chances. I think they had one in the post as well. And, you know, they had a few players, like I haven't watched Southampton since obviously they were in the Premier League, but they were playing good football. I think they were brilliant in some departments of the game, and where they actually, you know, put the ball in behind our defensive line and came running, and they were quick and fast and all that. So I think, you know, this is going to be a tough one. You know, they might even go and win this, and, you know, it could just be a result, as we obviously won the League Cup, and it is just what it is, and we have to deal with it. But the longer the game went on, and the way that we played, and Joe Gomez find his feet in that position, I think we actually won more and more ground. We won more and more possession, and I felt more secure and safe, and I felt like, yeah, let's go in there. And obviously, like you said, then Kumas goes and, you know, score his debut goal in his debut, and, you know, it's just, again, brilliant stories. The kid comes on, hasn't played before, starting up front, scoring a goal, celebrates, you know, with all the fans. You can't, you know, it's a story for a film. You know, that's the thing. And that's also one, you know, having Southampton playing that good in the first part of the first half, and we working ourselves into the first half later on, and then scoring a goal obviously takes energy from them. Like, they feel like, oh, fucking hell, we had so many chances to go 1-0 or 2-0 up here, and then we go and concede instead in the end of the first half. So it kind of obviously helps us moving forward in the second half.
Yeah, I think when you look at like the goal scorers, I just think it's hilarious. Like, Jason Kumas and Neil Danza's sons scored the goals for us. I just think it's like, it's just proper footy manager when you get to like 2040 and you're getting like regens of like kids of like footy players, and you're like, oh, there's Bobby Firmino's kid. Like, like it's just mad. But like the fact that they're in the team because of the injuries and stuff, it's no detriment to them because the quality is there. I think Klopp mentioned after the game, Kumas is a great finisher. I think we've seen that. It took a little bit of the deflection, but in terms of him getting into those positions and starting maybe over on the left, cutting in, he had a good chance where I think Stevens then makes a good challenge. It was maybe 50-50 in terms of a foul in the box, but then he keeps going, he keeps getting back up, he keeps chasing, and he's doing all the right things. And I think it's easy for maybe a young player to come into the Liverpool setup now rather than any other club, just because of the environment that we've created. But in terms of what they're going on and doing and showing on the pitch, like Kumas coming on the scoring, like you said, and then we bring off Van Dijk at half time, which is a pre-planned change, because of course we can't just keep putting Van Dijk on for 90 minutes and hoping he can save us. Kanate comes on and again is equally as good in terms of that. Their left winger was just like having a decent game, and then Kanate comes in and goes, nah, mate. Big Ibu Kanate is on now, lad. So just settle down a little bit.
He was boss.
He was boss again. And we can jump straight to the Dan's moment, because of course, like I said, Van Dijk comes off for Kanate, and then 60th minute, McConnell comes off for McAllister, just to give us a little bit more steel and a bit more the reverse of the change in the Carabao Cup game, which is weird. And then Dan's comes on for Kumas, and I think from the moment Dan's comes on, I wasn't expecting him to score. And I think it's hard to know what a young player is going to do. I think after seeing Kumas score, you're hoping Dan's is going to come on and go, right, I'll get my first goal as well. But the way that it all synced up for it, I think it was a nice little bit of play. And then Harvey Elliott has it on the 73rd minute, slips it in behind. You can be like, if he snatches at it or he hits it over or he just misses, you'd be like, oh, what a chance for the young lad. But he's just snatched at it because he's nervous or whatever. But the finish that he produced, the way he just clips it and chips it over the keeper, it's just fucking is ridiculously good. And I think, again, whenever you see a young lad coming on and scoring, I think it takes it to another level slightly when it's a young scouse lad coming on who supported the club, and his dad's a scouser and he's been in the academy all his life. And the interview after the game was boss. I love it when you see raw emotion from a young kid. But the first goal, and even the second goal in terms of a poacher's finish, was just like, how is it going so well? I think, like you said, Southampton could have scored 2 or 3 in the first half, to be fair to them. But the fact that we kept going and we had that superior finishing, and the finishing weirdly came from youngsters as well, was just class. And the whole celebration and all that from them was, again, it's lovely to see that again, the raw emotion of kids when they're coming on and getting a chance and scoring and taking their opportunity.
Yeah, and you know, the finish from Dan's is, you know, the first goal is as good as any striker out there when you get that chance. Perfect timing, great ball, obviously, in from Harvey Elliott, but you know, perfect timing with his body, just, you know, get it like chipped over the goalkeeper. It's not like he's stressed, I think, because you said he could put it wide, he could put it straight on the goalkeeper, but he just have that little, you know, ice in him, like, just, I'm going to take it cool here. And then he does that, and it's a brilliant finish, 2-0 up, you know, and that kind of feels like, yeah, it's sealed and done here. And then they obviously get the third goal as well, his second. And it's just one of them where you sense where a ball can actually come in a moment. Like he's in a position where he's very quick on his feet and in his mind where the ball can actually, you know, land. So he's just there with his feet and gets it in the goal. So obviously it's a little bit of luck, but at the same time, you need to be quick. You need to be able to, you know, at that speed that the ball goes, to actually, you know, put it in the net. So, you know, all credit to him. And it's just one of them where you think it's brilliant, but that you got the youngsters scoring and, you know, playing that well for us, you can't really complain at all. And, you know, to see the interviews after and all that. So, you know, to see the young boys having a little bit of struggle in this first part of the game, but then working their way into it. So obviously, we did some changes. I think that, you know, Gakpo was the one having a difficult game because obviously he, you know, misplaced a few finishes and, you know, didn't have a... But at the same time, obviously he's working, you know, working hard, being a body in there and stuff. But it's just great to see that the kids can actually go and do it. I understand they can't do it for 10 games in a row, but to come in and provide... you know, these kind of levels and having an impact in games like, you know, the League Cup final and the FA Cup going through against Southampton home, and just make sure that we keep ourselves in, we already won one tournament, but keep ourselves in this tournament. And, you know, it might be that they obviously get a chance to play in it again because they've done well, but it's also make sure that, you know, with their injuries, hopefully not as bad going forward, that we get more options and actually a stronger team that we can compete for actually going all the way as well. So, they have helped us, whatever, whoever plays in the future and where we are in a few weeks or whatever, you know, they have played their part. You can't, you can never take that away from them.
Massively. I think, especially when it's like young kids as well from the academy, like having to rely on them in a way, the pressure, and the way they're thriving is just, it's amazing. And then again, Train Ioane comes on, 78th minute, ridiculous, 16.
Look like it's 12.
Just mad. Just crazy. I think someone posted the stat like he was born, like, what was it, 4 days after Fernando Torres signed for Liverpool.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow. I'm just looking at them stats and I'm just like, I feel old. I feel ancient. It is hilarious. But again, it's just these lads are coming on, and I think Klopp's little soundbite after the game about Train Ioane, he was like what a player, and he was like laughing because he's obviously seen him in training, and he must be some player because we sign these players because they've got the whole package, is not just the personality and not being a knobhead and all that stuff that we want and want them to fit in. They've also got to be fucking very good. So I'm excited to see what his future brings as well. But I'm just mostly just made up for these young lads and getting the first goals and all that can take a, not a weight off the shoulders, but it can just give them that little extra 5-10% in games when they're coming off the bench and they haven't, I guess, if they haven't scored a goal, it's like, well, no one's expecting me to score, so it's sound. But now they've got that little bit in them, they can then be a bit more of a threat going into those opportunities, which I think is, it makes us more dangerous as well, which is boss. And of course, then Kay Gordon comes on as well, who's a little bit of the forgotten fella in amongst all of the youngsters with the bad injury that he had, but I was made up to see him back as well.
Yeah.
I've just saw a stat, and I always use Mike Reed from Opta. I need to do a stat show with Mike, actually, but he's posted something like not long ago, which I thought was quite interesting. 11% of the players that have ever played for Liverpool since the club was founded in 1892 were given their debut for the club by Jurgen Klopp.
Ooh.
11% of all players that have been given a debut, Jurgen Klopp was the guy. Mad. That's crazy. I don't even read Mike's tweets anymore. I just retweet it first and then I read it after because I know he's
it's going to be bossing
out the park every time.
But
I think you mentioned that on the last show, like the amount of debuts that were given players, and it's enforced because the injuries and stuff, but it's because we've got them in place to come in because they're quality players, but they're also the young players, they're ready to take the chance, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just boss to see, isn't it?
They would probably have made the debuts anyway, not in the same circumstances. Like they might have had like 50 minutes here. Say we played this game like last night, then we would be 3-0 up. You know, without being disrespectful to Southampton, but if we had a little bit of a stronger team and we would have been 2-0 up, you know, early in the game or whatever, and, you know, we would have put on like maybe Kumas on then, or, you know, that kind of thing we would have done, I guess, you know, they would still have in their debuts, but not playing from start in these kind of games, maybe. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, Klopp trusts them, and you know, like everyone else in the team, saying, you know, they are really good players. Like, they're showing that on the training pitch every day when we train with them. Like, it's not just a youngster that is in Liverpool. It's actually a youngster that got quality, and they've said it all. Like, we've seen them. Kelleher said something about Dance that, you know, I've seen him in training. He's got quality finishes, and you know, he's really good and doing really good things. And I guess they are all, you know, doing good things, because obviously no one's going to say anything else, but, you know, they're still going to give them praise if they deserve it. And, you know, they've said, you know, we know that they are good. They are young, but they are good. So, you know, we don't have to stress them. We don't have to rush them. The circumstances are now that we've got the injuries. Yes, so it gives another kind of situation. But at the same time, most of the players seem to understand that, yeah, they will have their time. Maybe not as much as they've done already, but, you know, it will come, and we don't have to stress them, because they will just keep on developing, playing, and, you know, obviously Klopp won't be there to guide them next season, which is a bit sad, because I think, you know, he's have a great impact on them, and, you know, in you know, the influential way and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, that you think when you see those youngsters, the future is bright for the club. Doesn't really matter if there's going to be a few of them not having a long Liverpool career, if they will. We will see where that takes them, obviously. But you can see that they got the quality to make it at this level anyway.
Yeah, massively. I think it was, we were praising Southampton before, like, in terms of, like, their, I guess, their philosophy, like keeping the ball on the floor, little triangles, like playing out from the back and whatever. And then I saw the interview by Russell Martin after the game, and I was like, bit of a bell end, aren't you? It's just like, I just like, he was given like dead, like, like decent normal answers, and then he just got like a little bit annoyed at the end, a little bit. And I was like, I was like, is that because you were getting rinsed by Luis Suarez for like the whole time you were at Norwich playing at the back? Maybe he's still a bit sour about that, but which I just loved talking about. And I was, love thinking about, and I was trying to find like a few Suarez goals where maybe he ripped him, but I've been working all day, so I'll probably look at that later. just to rub it in a little bit more. But I enjoyed that interview. But yeah, and a boss 3-0 win. We go through to the next round. We play United away. I guess not the best. I would have preferred Forest, but in terms of,
I don't know. Saying, would you?
only because, like, I don't want to give them, like,
yeah,
they're at the point now.
In terms of a game, the game is more massive. But, you know, to be honest, like, I fucking fancy us to go and play them, because I think they, you know, they've been shit. So, you know, you should never be, you know, too naive or disrespectful in a way that turns it. But, you know, I see playing against Forest away or Man United away is the fucking same at the moment, to be honest.
No, for me, it was more because they're at that weird position where we used to be, where we used to just like be shit. But if we beat United in a cup game or whatever, or FA Cup, that would be like something we can shout about and cheer about and use it as like a way to like give them shit for the thing. Now, if they get a result against us, hopefully not, they can like be like, oh yeah, we stopped you winning the quadruple, or like, because that's all they've got. I love it and hate it at the same time. But like you said, in terms of us going and wanting to make more memories and playing, like you said, not the best teams, I guess, in United, but like in terms of when we play them, it's always, I guess, like Chelsea, like they raise the game. It's always, they're always up for a little bit more, especially at their place. But if we can get some, if some players fancy coming back soon, like just like, don't know, this week, next week, if some players want to start getting themselves fit, that would be absolutely fucking lovely if you could, please. Because the games don't stop coming, of course. We play Forest on Saturday. Away, 3 o'clock kickoff, and then the games don't stop. We've got Prague away. We've got this massive City game coming up, 10th of March at home. We've got Prague at home, and then we've got United away. Then we've got Brighton at home because the Everton game's got postponed. So the games don't stop, and I think going to Forest on Saturday, like, I'm hoping that at least Nunes and Salah, because they weren't involved last night, that, and Gakpo played quite a massive portion of that game. I think he came off in the 90th minute. Hopefully that means that they're going to be ready for that one. I think maybe Klopp didn't want to risk them in a game against Southampton, where they'd be up for it. They'd be flying into tackles, trying to close it down and whatever. Maybe Nunes and Salah be ready for this one, because I think we can't I think these players that we've got are capable of keeping on winning, but I think it's a bit unfair to just keep, like, you're the 11, we've got two subs, just crack on in the good old days where you'd only have like two players coming off the bench. We need like the five subs to keep everyone fit if we're going to keep on going through all the competitions.
Yeah, and you know, it's a massive game, even if it's, you know, Forest away, because it's Premier League and where we are in the table, you know, where we know that it's going to be a Manchester derby as well. You know, it's a game where if we can go win and get the 3 points, you know, it could be something out of a derby, even though Man City is obviously many levels above Manchester United nowadays. It's still a derby. You never know what's going to come. It could be an upset and all that kind of stuff. So for me, you know, we hope that, you know, we will have some players back fit and ready to play for us away, because we need the quality. We can obviously rely on few of the kids because we know they can do the job. But like you said, it's not fair on them to, you know, say, well, go there, go again away from home, which will be a difficult task, and do the job, because they already played so much football now and they are only young. We have to, you know, remember that, even if they've been brilliant. So hopefully we will have a few players back now who can come in and, you know, that we know are on a, you know, world-class level in terms of what we need. So I'm just looking forward to that game and hope we can keep on winning and, you know, still fighting and giving everyone else behind us the stress to, you know, pick up points, to not fall too far behind us. Obviously, if I hope that, but, you know, that's what we need to do. We need to do the job first and foremost. So I'm really looking forward to it, to be honest, because I'm going to be in Norrköping as well with friends, where you've been. It's going to be like a supporters meeting. So you're probably going to be an 80 people or something, or even more, and just having bevies. So it's going to be good. And hopefully the Reds can win at the same time.
Bevy is more important for you. But yeah, if the Reds can win as well, that'll be boss. Like you said, there's the United derby on the, that's on the Sunday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Again, we can just get the 3 points. Like you said, I'm not expecting anything of United in that game, but like you said, it's a derby. So weird stuff happens, like when we play United and we drew. Like these games happen when you're playing where they raise the game, and I don't for one second have any expectations, but if they can nick a draw, that'd be fucking absolutely huge. Should we do score predictions, or should we not? Should we do score predictions for?
Yeah, I'm not gonna try to predict the starting lineup, because
no, let's,
you know,
not do that.
I can't be bothered with that. But we could do score predictions for fun, and you know, I'll say I'm probably gonna go a little bit safe again and say, it's a tough one. It's away. I say 3-1 Liverpool again, because it's my go-to result, and I think, you know, 3-1 is always feeling nice instead of a 2-1 or a 1-0, because then my nerves going to go and stuff. So I'd rather have a 3-1, because we got some players back, hopefully, that can do the job.
Yeah, I think like we beat them 3-0 at home. But hoping we can keep another clean sheet. Of course, Divock Origi, the absolute god, the legend's there. Hopefully he's not playing, because he'll just pop up with a goal, and we don't want to tarnish Divock's legacy. But I mean, it won't anyway, but you know what I mean. 2-0, I'll go 2-0 to the Reds. Yeah. So yeah, let's hope the Reds can crack on and get some players back from injury if possible, and yeah, rotate a little bit, I guess, with the players that if we've got Nunes and Salah, you can keep a Harvey Elliott on the bench, who's playing again, a player we haven't mentioned, but running himself into the ground. Literally.
So many of them. That's
There's
the
so
thing.
Many. Like it's too hard to get with. Be a fucking 4-hour podcast if we went through every person.
Yeah. But you know, he's proving himself all the time. The way he runs and fights in love to play for the club. You know, and he's getting better. He's good football wise already, but I think he's having impact in games all the time. So, you know, all credit to him, and just keep him going. Obviously, deserves a little bit of rest, but. Terms of what he's doing for us as a player, you know, being 20 years old with over 100 games, you know, there's nothing you can complain about. Brilliant player.
Exactly. Well, if you can have Gakpo on the bench, if you can have Elliot on the bench, at least then you've got some attacking options. If you start Nunes and Salah, you can have Gakpo and Salah, Gakpo and Elliot coming off the bench. So it's all about having them options again, because which we've been so used to this season when we've been bringing on five subs, and all five subs are fucking class, and that's why we've like top of like the most the most subs coming off the bench and getting goals for us and all that stuff. But if we can get back to that with the injuries and stuff and get a little bit better, then it makes it a little bit easier for us. We can't always do stuff the hard way, unfortunately, But yeah, let's hope the Reds can go on. Yeah, Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff. I think it's always going to be a tricky game when you're going away to Forest. They're going to have a big atmosphere. They're going to want to cut. And that's the thing, when you're top of the table, all of the teams want to just cause a bit of an upset and obviously get points to themselves. But like, it's set up perfectly for them to get
it's a team to beat.
Yeah,
and you're playing against the best. So
yeah, and they want to set up and get a good result. But hopefully, the Reds can just carry on the way that we're doing in terms of being just mentality fucking monsters and absolute beasts. But we shall leave it there and get out of here. Thanks as always. Sorry, it's been a bit of a long one, but we've been too busy partying for the past 4 days to do a show. But we'll promise we'll do more frequent, because I think we've been like one a week recently, where we're usually twice a week at least, so we'll get back to that, I promise. But yeah, thanks as always to everyone for listening. Thanks to Christian as always for jumping on, and yeah, up the Reds. That's what we're going to be Forest on Saturday. Nice one, see you later.
I'm Jamie Carragher and you are listening to the Cop Eye Podcast.
Podcast Network.